Well, it's fall of 2024. I'm recording this on the 5th of September, and it's Thursday. We don't have mask mandate on airplanes anymore. What's the story with that? What happened? That's what we're talking about today. I'm going to read from a U.S. District Court from Florida, a Trump appointee by the name of Catherine Mizell Kimball, and it's a wonderful read. It's a wonderful time. Let's celebrate this together. It's Health Freedom Defense Fund Incorporated and Sarah Hope versus Joseph R. Biden Jr. in his official capacity as President of the United States et al. As travelers have been reminded, why am I doing this? Because this is something we really should not forget. Am I right or am I right? Or am I right or am I right or am I right? Incidentally, I should mention two essays by Josh Blackman. One, The Essential Free Exercise Clause, I've gone through this. And two, The Essential Second Amendment. I've gone through this. Josh is a dear man. I asked him on the podcast. He said he was too busy this year, and he really is. He's doing a lot right now for our future. But in those two very substantive academic articles, which you could read, you could understand. It's he documents the constitutional evils perpetuated on the American people during the lockdowns in the name of public health. Don't forget it. Ingest it and don't forget it. Basically, he said, have at it. You know, good luck covering it. And I plan on covering these articles without him personally being here. I will just read from them and link them so that you know where to get them, and so that we can support work like this that is helping us have a longer attention span, which is something that a lot of people are struggling with. So back to the Health Freedom Defense Fund Incorporated, that's Carolina Daza and Sarah Hope, Pope versus Joe Biden. As travelers have been reminded for more than a year, federal law requires wearing masks in airports, train stations, and other transportation hubs, as well as on airplanes, buses, trains, and most other public conveyances in the United States. Failure to comply may result in civil and criminal penalties from the same people who say defund the police. Interesting. Including removal from the conveyance. This masking requirement, commonly known as the mask mandate, is a Center for Disease Control and Prevention CDC regulation published in the Federal Register on February 3rd, 2021. It's story time. I hope you don't mind. A tale of two counties, Orange County and Los Angeles County. I flew out of both those during the scamdemic, during the lockdowns. It was like night and day, man. Night and day. Orange County Republican, Los Angeles County lost. The Los Angeles flight was crowded as hell. We were stuck in there like sardines. And obviously, we couldn't social distance under those circumstances. So that requirement went right out the window. Remember social distancing? Remember how histrionic they were? They were even painting it. They were supporting these businesses that were supplying these signs and stuff you put on the floor that are still on the floor in many establishments, and you get on an airplane and you're sitting right next to somebody, and you have to have a mask on, and they were, well, National Socialists on the mask thing in Los Angeles County. Now they weren't National Socialists on the social distance. All of a sudden that disappeared. We didn't need that anymore on the plane. You're sitting right next to somebody like a sardine in a can, and yet you have to have your mask on. But you could have your mask off if you want to take a drink of something, or if you want to eat a ch chips. So I remember just drawing out the eating as long as possible, and whenever someone was, I would keep the mask under my nose. And when I was asked about it, I said, "Well, I don't breathe through my nose. I breathe through my mouth, so this should be fine." And no, you have to have it over your nose. And so then I would just take it off and take a dr long drink of water and eat a chip very slowly. And eventually the person would the member of the crew would just move on. It was usually you could tell it was a Democrat. You know what I mean? You can tell. He was a member of the coalition, you know. And you know, on Orange County, it was like it was America. People weren't wearing masks. They weren't doing the social distance thing either, but then that goes along with not wearing masks. They weren't worried about it. It's like you cross the line into Los Angeles County, and all of a sudden people pretended to worry about it. Anyway, so I'm a huge fan of this. Let's continue. In July 2021, Sarah Pope, thank you. Anna Daza and Health Freedom Defense Fund sued various government officials and the CDC, seeking a declaratory judgment that mask mandate was unlawful and to have it set aside for violating the Administrative Procedure Act, APA. Yeah. By the way, the APA was also the basis of striking down, well, reversing is a better way to put it, reversing Chevron deference. That was the Loper Bright case, future topic on the Republican Professor podcast. Following submission of the administrative record, defendants, collectively referred to as the government, moved for summary judgment on January 18th, 2022. Big mistake. Big mistake on the part of the government, but actually it turned out to be a wonderful thing for us. As provided in the party's agreed briefing schedule, plaintiffs filed a cross motion for summary judgment February 17th, 2022. And what date is this signed? It was signed April 18th, 2022. My gosh. The parties completed briefing on March 31st. The cross motions for summary judgment are now ripe for review. The court concludes that the mask mandate exceeds the CDC's statutory authority and violates the procedures required for agency rulemaking under the APA. Accordingly, the court vacates the mandate and remands it to the CDC. Background. In December of 2019, a highly contagious respiratory virus, colloquially known as COVID-19, began spreading throughout the world. A month later, the Secretary of Health and Human Services declared COVID-19 a public health emergency. Then on March 13th, 2020, President Trump declared the COVID-19 outbreak a national emergency. COVID-19 continued to spread. I'm on page three. Throughout 2020, despite experiments with unprecedented movement restrictions and social distancing measures, By the end of 2020, approximately 20 million Americans had been affected with the COVID-19, and over 360,000 Americans had died from it. Died from it or died with it? Catherine. Huh? The fall and winter of 2020 brought a spike in new COVID-19 infections, due in part to the emerging variants of the virus, some of which were more severe than the original strain and more easily transmissible. The number of new cases peaked in early January 2021 and decreased steadily in February. January 21st, 2021, one day after taking the oath of office, President Biden issued Executive Order 13998. The executive order recognized the threats of the continuing COVID-19 pandemic and reasoned that mask wearing can mitigate the risk of travelers spreading COVID-19. Accordingly, the order directed executive officials to require masks on various forms of transportation and while in transit hubs. By the way, based on what I saw here in Orange County, and I could tell they're Democrats because of the bumper stickers, there were quite a few people driving around in their cars by themselves with masks. I never saw anybody doing that with the Republican bumper sticker. I think it's pretty safe to say there was a party line difference on that. And so these folks were doing that before this order, and they were extra doing it after the order. They were really excited about this order, apparently. What I'm trying to say is they no one was thinking about this at all, as she's going to point out. They weren't thinking. I'm a big fan of thinking. I mean, I used to be a bigger fan, but then I lost all this weight. I used to be huge, huge fan. Well, approximately 2 weeks later, on February 3rd, 2021, the CDC published the mask mandate without allowing public participation through the APA's notice and comment procedures. As the basis for dispensing with the ordinary APA requirements, the CDC found it that it would be impractical and contrary to the public's health to delay the mandates, the mandate seek public comment. Normally, there's a comment period where I think it's 90 days usually. Anybody can get on there and comment and criticize the proposed rule. This is required under the APA, the Administrative Procedures Act. This is commonly known in administrative law circles, and I know administrative law doesn't sound like a very sexy topic for the Republican Professor podcast, but let me tell you something. It's an incredibly sexy topic. And if you're on the ball on this stuff, then you're on the cutting edge of American politics right now. In fact, I would say that if you don't know anything about administrative law, you're probably an American politics idiot, because it's front and center on this stuff. Okay. You got to get up on this, and that's what I'm trying to help you with here. Got to prepare you for Loper Bright. I got to prepare you for talking about this stuff. This affects a lot of different things. It affects the Second Amendment. It affects the First Amendment, as Josh Blackman points out in those articles. The mandate also disavowed being a rule under the APA. I'm on page four. In the mandate, the CDC explained that COVID-19 spreads very easily and sustainably between people who are in close contact. The spread occurs mainly through the transfer of respiratory droplets from one person to another. Masks, the CDC found, prevent this spread by blocking exhaled virus and reducing inhalation of these droplets. And these are quotations. Because COVID-19 can be spread by pre-symptomatic and asymptomatic individuals infected with it, that is to say, it can be spread by people who are not sick, healthy people. The CDC found that masks are one of the most effective strategies available for reducing COVID-19 transmission, unquote. And I'm not always going to tell you when the quotations begin and end, just for the sake of getting through this. The mandate did not differentiate between kinds of masks. Fascinating. That's fascinating. All masks are created equal on this mandate. This is fascinating. The public is in grave danger, and yet you can just feel free to tear off a piece of your mom's prom dress from 1972, and it could be just made of lace, who knows, and sew that sucker up. And maybe put like a Kleenex in there or something. That's the same as a surgical mask. Sure. That's the same as, Ebola virus mask. You know, do you remember that one movie with Dustin Hoffman? Yeah, you couldn't sleep for a week after seeing that film. So the mandate did not differentiate between kinds of masks based on their efficacy at blocking transmission. It simply included a footnote linking to CDC guidance for the attributes of acceptable masks. Masks can be either manufactured or homemade and should be of a solid piece of material without slits, exhalation valves, or punctures. And I'm assuming they mean macroscopically, when you look at it without the aid of a microscope, there's no holes in it. Of course, we know that there's holes in these masks. We know that if it's ordinary cloth like this, if you look at this under a microscope, you're going to see holes, right? You never heard of breathable material, cotton. People prefer 100% cotton to polyester. Well, at least I do. I know that the green people are trying to get you to wear plastic, and they don't like cotton because cotton requires a lot of water, and we got to save that water, according to them. So it goes in the ocean and rises, makes the ocean rise. Okay. The mask mandate requires that a person wear, I'm on page 5, a mask while boarding, disembarking, and traveling on any conveyance into or within the United States. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. You could be driving across the border with the cartel in a Jeep Wrangler with the hood off, or with not the hood, but the top off. And you got to wear a mask. Got to wear a mask. The mandate's reach extends to aircraft, trains, road vehicles, including ride-sharing services like Uber, vessels, and other means of transport. That would include skateboards. You're skateboarding into the United States with the cartel? Got to wear a mask. I'm starting to see why they don't want public comment. That makes sense. It makes sense, which is what we're doing right here. We're publicly commenting. That's what we're doing. It also applies beyond conveyances to any transportation hub, which includes any airport, bus terminal, marina, seaport. Wow. Seaport. Got the ocean right there. You got thousands of miles of open ocean, open air. Very dangerous without a mask. Or other port, subway station, terminal, train station, U.S. port of entry. We still have those? Or any other location that provides transportation subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. Are you saying that we have borders? Is that what you're saying? In addition to the requirements that individuals in these locations wear masks, the mandate also enlists conveyance operators to police it. Wow. So in other words, it's commandeering private individuals, not just state, but private. It requires operators to use best efforts to enforce mandates. How do you measure somebody's best effort? Anyway, though broad in scope, the mandate provides exceptions to limit its coverage based on the person, the conveyance, or the situation. First, the mandate excludes children under the age of 2 years old and persons with a disability that prevents them from being able to safely wear a mask. The latter exception applies only to individuals who cannot wear a mask because of a disability that is within the scope of the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA. Second, it excludes personal, non-commercial use of vehicles and commercial vehicles occupied by a single person. Well, what if that single person is married? Then they're not single. Incidentally, on the non-commercial use of vehicles, given the way the Commerce Clause is understood by Democrats, is there such a thing? And they think that everything has to do with interstate commerce. Third, it excludes situations where, for example, a person must wear a mask, must wear an oxygen mask. In other words, if that person needs oxygen, then you don't have to wear a mask. But if you're one of the people that don't need oxygen, if you're one of those people, or is actively eating, drinking, or taking medication, LOL. Or must remove the mask to verify his identity or to catch his breath after feeling winded. Oh, I didn't know that was an exception. I mean, at the time, I've read this carefully, as you can see my LOLs. Man, I would have used that more often. After feeling winded, or to communicate with someone who is hearing impaired, which is everybody who's enforcing the mask mandate, so you have to yell at them. Health Freedom Defense Fund, DASA, and Pope sued to challenge the mask mandate on July 12, 2021. DASA and Pope routinely travel by airplane. DASA has anxiety that's aggravated by being around Democrats. I mean, sorry, is aggravated by wearing masks. DASA alleges that the government does not recognize her anxiety as a basis for a medical exemption from the mandate. Similarly, Pope flew regularly before the pandemic, but has done so less since the CDC imposed the mask mandate, as the constricted breathing from wearing a mask provokes or exacerbates her panic attacks. Health Freedom Defense Fund is a nonprofit organization that opposes laws and regulations that force individuals to submit to the administration of medical products, procedures, and devices against their will. I'm on page six. Health Freedom represents the interests of its members who are subject to the mask mandate, at least one of whom has alleged harms sufficient to establish standing in her own right. The government does not dispute that at least some plaintiffs have Article 3 standing to ch challenge the CDC's transportation mask order because it imposes a legal obligation on the individual plaintiffs to wear masks when using public transportation. Seeking a declaratory judgment that the mask mandate is unlawful and to have it set aside under the APA, plaintiffs sued President Joseph Biden, Secretary of Health and Human Services Xavier Becerra. Actually, I don't think it's called secretary. I don't think we're allowed to call him that anymore. I think it's administrative assistant now. Or sometimes I've seen office manager. So let me restate that. Administrative assistant of Health and Human Services Xavier Becerra. Or, okay, let me try this. Office manager, program coordinator, Xavier Becerra. That sounds better. Yeah, secretary, it's just an older term. Like my mom was a secretary and they do all the typing and they answer the phones, and some people feel it's a demeaning term for women. My mom never felt that way because she wasn't an idiot. I recognize that some people feel that way, so I'm going to switch it from Secretary of Health and Human Services to office manager. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky, Director of CDC's Division of Global Migration and Quarantine, Martin Cetrone, and all in their official capacities. Plaintiffs also sued the CDC and the United States of America. The legal standard: summary judgment is appropriate if there is no genuine dispute as to the material fact, and the movement is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. A fact is material if it could change the outcome of the litigation, and a dispute is genuine if a reasonable finder of fact could conclude for the non-moving party. The APA requires that reviewing courts hold unlawful and set aside any agency action that is arbitrary or capricious. Arbitrary or capricious makes it illegal. In excess of statutory jurisdiction, authority, limitations, or short of a statutory right, or that it was issued without observance of procedure required by law. That is 5 USC Section 706 of that's the Administrative Procedure Act 706. You'll see that a lot in administrative law reading, like textbooks and stuff. In a case reviewing agency action, the entire case on the review is a question of law, and the district judge sits as an appellate tribunal. Summary judgment serves as the mechanism for deciding as a matter of law whether the agency action is supported by the administrative record and otherwise consistent with APA standard of review. If a plaintiff fails on its APA claim, the relief under the statute normally will be vacatur of the agency's order. Analysis. I'm on page 8. Plaintiff's amended complaint alleges CDC mandate on several grounds. Challenges CDC mandate on several grounds. It alleges that the mandate exceeds CDC's statutory authority. That's count one. In the alternative, it alleges that if the mandate is statutorily authorized, Congress improperly delegated its legislative power to the CDC, count four. The amended complaint further alleges that the CDC improperly invoked the good cause exception to avoid the notice and comment procedures required under the APA. That's count two. Finally, it alleges that the mandate violates the APA because it is arbitrary and capricious. Count three. Although plaintiffs initially challenged the lawfulness of President Biden's January 21st, 2021 executive order in counts five and six, they withdraw these claims. All right. Boom, boom, boom. The mask mandate exceeds CDC's authority under the Public Health Services Act. Woo! Oh, wait, hold up. Hold up. Hold up, y'all. Yeah, hold up. I'm on page 9. The court proceeds to discuss plaintiff's remaining claims. Okay. A. The mask mandate exceeds the CDC's authority under the Public Health Services Act. See, a lot of you guys think that you think I only talk about the Second Amendment. I talk about other stuff. I talk about all sorts of stuff. We're talking about administrative law. We're talking about public health. We do that a lot. Although the intersection of these things is where the action is. Because administrative agencies are creatures of statute, they possess only the authority that Congress has provided. In it, issuing the mask mandate that requires most persons to wear masks over the mouth and nose when traveling on any conveyance into or within the United States, the director of the CDC relied on a section of the Public Health Services Act of 1944 for authority. That provision empowers him to promulgate regulations aimed at identifying, isolating, and destroying diseases. Quote, this is from a court case. The CDC, with approval of the Secretary of Health and Human Services, is authorized to make and enforce such regulations as in, this is a 2021 court case, as in his judgment are necessary to provide, prevent the introduction, transmission, or spread of communicable diseases from foreign countries into the United States or possession or from one state into the possession of any other state or possession. For purposes of carrying out and enforcing such regulations, the CDC may provide for such inspection, fumigation, disinfection, sanitation, pest extermination, destruction of animals or articles found to be so infected or contaminated. Ah, found to be so infected or contaminated. Found to be so infected or contaminated as to the sources of dangerous infections to human beings and other measures, as in his judgment, may be necessary. Page 10. Other sections of the PHSA. Also, probably the CDC with a limited power. I underlined limited power to apprehend, detain, examine, or provide conditions for the release of individuals coming into the state or possession from a foreign country or traveling between states, but only when the CDC reasonably believes that the person is infected with a communicable disease and is a probable source of infection to others. Only when the CDC reasonably believes that the person is infected with a communicable disease and is a probable source of infection to others. Probable, not possible. Probable. In that later situation, the CDC may detain the individual. The individual may detain the individual up if, upon examination, he is found to be infected. Since Congress enacted it in 1944, the PHSA has generally been limited to quarantining infected individuals and prohibiting the import or sale of animals known to transmit disease. It has been rarely invoked, at least until recently. Within the last 2 years, the CDC has found within Section 264A the power to shut down the cruise ship industry, stop landlords from evicting tenants who have not paid their rent, and require that persons using public conveyances wear masks. By the way, how do you transfer a public residence, sorry, a private residence into a public owner, publicly owned thing? That's what happened. That's what happened there. I mean, are you still going to require me to pay property taxes in that situation? Oh, no, you still have to pay property taxes. It's just that I can't collect rent. I see. I got it. Yeah, that's communism. That is communism right there, buddy. Courts have concluded that the first two of these measures exceeded the CDC's statutory authority under Section 264. There's some references there. I'm not going to mention them. No court has yet ruled on the legality of the third. Let's go back to the third thing. Shut down cruise ship industry, stop landlords from evicting tenants. Those two things were struck down. Require that persons using public conveyances wear masks. That's where we're at. That's the third thing. No court has yet ruled on the legality of the third. I should do the one about the landlords and tenants. I should do that one. I got to track that one down. Let me make a note to myself really quick. I'm going to track that down. There's no case cited for that. There's no footnote. Florida versus Becerra. Okay. I'll take a look at that. I gotta find that one. I'll track it down. At first blush, it appears more closely related to the powers granted in Section 264 than either the sale order or the eviction moratorium. But after rigorous statutory analysis, the court concludes that Section 264A does not authorize the CDC to issue the mask mandate. This is a Trump-appointed judge. As always, when determining the meaning of a statutory provision, the court looks first to its language, giving the words used their ordinary meaning. The opening sentence of 264A, and let's go back really quick. That would be 42 U.S. Code, Section 264A. 42 U.S. Code. That's where the Section 1983, that 42 U.S. Code is where Section 1983, you could sue the government for violating your rights. As long as they're clearly established at the time. And it's a matter of policy that. Well, actually, either way, so if it's a matter of policy or it's not a matter of policy, you can sue the government or the individual. All right. Now, as always, when determining the meaning of a statutory provision, you look first at the language, ordinary meaning. The opening sentence of 264A grants the CDC power to issue regulations that, in its judgment, are necessary to prevent the spread of communicable disease. The second sentence informs the grant of authority by illustrating the kinds of measures that could be necessary: inspection, fumigation, disinfection, sanitation, pest extermination, and destruction of contaminated articles and animals. I'm on page 11, people. In other words, the second sentence narrows the scope of the first. Thus, if Section 264A authorizes the mask mandate, the power to do so must be found in one of the actions enumerated in the second sentence. Let's get that second sentence. Inspection, fumigation, disinfection, sanitation, pest extermination, and destruction of contaminated animals and articles. So what is she doing? She's saying, take that list of things that the government can do to prevent an outbreak or curb an outbreak. Where's the mask mandate fit with that? Is it inspection? Nine. Is it fumigation? Nine. Ever ask a 7-year-old German boy if he's eight? And then he says nine. And you're like, wait, are you? So you are not, or is it sanitation? Nine. Is it pest extermination? Nine. Destruction of contaminated animals and articles? 10. No. Well, let's take a look here. That sentence provides for inspection, fumigation, disinfection, sanitation, pest extermination, destruction, and other measures. A requirement that individual travelers wear a mask is not inspection, fumigation, disinfection, destruction, or pest extermination, and the government does not contend otherwise. All she's doing is reading the words. This is called textualism in the sense that the text controls. You got to look at the words, for God's sake. And I'm going to make another comment here. Page 10 at the top. Remember, I said limited power? I underlined it. The text of the law passed by Congress, the PHSA, provides the CDC, which is a creature of Congress, with a limited power. Limited power. Let me talk about how words limit power. One moment. Okay, I just had to find something to show you. We're talking about how text limits the power of government. We want a government of limited powers, not unlimited. People who run government want unlimited power. That's just how it tends to be. Even good people in government tend to get carried away. It's human nature. That's why we have separation of powers. I'm going to share my screen and I'm going to compare and contrast the CRS report on the introduction to legislative process, which is published by Congress, with the US Constitution, Article 1, Section 1, which creates Congress. Okay, Constitution comes first, Congress comes later. Congress then has an understanding of Constitution, which is at odds with the Constitution itself. I'm going to show you. So let's get a handle on this, okay? Here's the introduction to legislative process in the US Congress, Congressional Research Service, informing the legislative debate since 1914. This particular one is available as a PDF, updated November 24th, 2020. If you're wondering how to get a copy, you giggle, go to giggle.com, CRS, Introduction to Legislation. It's the first one, clicky little wiki. And then you can print that out as a PDF and you can give it as a stocking stuffer for Christmas, which is what I do. Now, I want to show you something down. I want you to scroll down. You see this table of contents? You see the overview? I'm always very interested in the overview. Look at that first sentence there. Introduction to the legislative process in U.S. Congress. Congressional Research Service is an arm of the U.S. Congress. Overview: Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution grants all legislative powers to a bicameral Congress. Okay. Don't forget that. Don't forget what it said. Just giggle. Go to giggle.com, Article 1, Section 1. I didn't even have to say U.S. Constitution. And giggle said, you must mean the U.S. Constitution. Fascinating. Congress.gov provides Article 1, Section 1 of the United States Constitution. Fascinating. Let's take a look at what Congress.gov says that the Constitution says. All legislative powers. That's what it says, right? So far, so good. I'm going to go back to that CRS report on legislative process in the U.S. Congress, Congressional Research Service. It says all legislative powers, right? Well, let's go back to the Constitution. Actually, Section 1 says all legislative powers herein granted. What in the world do those two words do there? They limit Congress's power just with two words. They don't have all legislative power. They only have the powers that are herein granted, specifically those ones in Section 8 that are enumerated. And take my Congress course if you want to know more. But look at how Congress itself says they take out the herein granted. It just says all legislative powers. That's actually false. Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution does not grant all legislative powers to a bicameral Congress. That's false. It grants all legislative powers herein granted, which means it's not just all legislative powers, it's those ones that are mentioned in the text. The text controls. The text limits government. That this is American Constitutionalism 101, and the U.S. Constitution, as interpreted by Congress, got it wrong in an official document. And you might be thinking right now, well, if they're not, if it's, what if it seems like they're saying the same thing? They're not saying the same thing. First of all, it's not false to say that all legislative powers herein granted are given to the Congress. That's not false. This is true. But it is false to say all legislative powers are given to Congress, because guess who has some legislative power in our separation of powers scheme of things? The President of the United States has some legislative powers. The President has power to address Congress in a state of a union. That's actually a duty, not a just a power, but because it's a duty, it's also a power. The President also can veto. This is like really basic, guys. This is I'm embarrassed that I'm saying this. And all presidents have used the veto power, starting with George Washington, who vetoed for constitutional reasons and policy reasons, policy disagreements. The veto goes all the way back. It's an Article 2 power, not an Article 1 power. It's an Article 2, meaning it's a presidential executive power. It's a power that the Constitution takes from the legislative idea and gives it to the executive, not because it's not a legislative power, it is, but because we have separation of powers and checks and balances, and it's a check and a balance that the president can appoint officials in the executive branch and could do all sorts of stuff. But those officials, if they're officers, must be confirmed by the Senate. So the Senate has some of the power of appointment, which is an executive function. The Senate has some of that power. And the president has the power to veto. The Congress also has the power to override that veto if certain conditions are met. Now, what does this have to do with this? Well, it has a lot to do with it. The Trump appointee is saying, reminding a Democratic president, Congress has limited power. It's limited by the text of the Constitution and that which Congress creates. This act and the CDC, this agency, has limited power, limited by the words in the authorizing documents. The text controls. And you got to read it carefully. By the way, I'm going to share my screen once again for those of you who are not listening. You should be shocked and horrified that the US Congress, in an official document, leaves out herein granted. You should be horrified. You should be writing your representative and saying, what the hell is going on? You should be writing your senator, what is going on here? Why are you leaving these words out? They're not throwaway words. They mean something. All legislative powers admits of no exceptions. This in the Constitution admits of exceptions. Saying all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives, is saying all legislative powers herein granted are vested in a Congress. It's limited to herein granted in this document. And here you have Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution grants all legislative powers. And you know what? Let's just get rid of herein granted. We don't want that. We can do anything we want. You see a theme here? No, you can't do anything you want. You're limited. This is American Constitutionalism 101, called the rule of law. As always, when determining the meaning of a statutory provision, the court looks first to its language, giving the words used their ordinary meaning. The opening sentence. See, she's looking at these things. The opening sentence. Like I was just doing with the CRS report on introduction to legislative process. I'm looking carefully at the language, the self-understanding. No wonder we have so many problems. That sucker is published by the US Congress, and you don't have a public outrage. What does that tell you about the American people? They haven't been educated. Probably the parents are distracted. They have goals for their kids, which do not include reading carefully. And what could possibly go wrong? All right. Well, we were on page 11. A requirement that individual travelers wear a mask is not inspection, not fumigation, disinfection, destruction, or pest extermination. And the government does not contend otherwise. Instead, it argues that the mask mandate is a sanitation measure. or another measure akin to sanitation. All right. Plaintiffs disagree, arguing that a mask requirement is outside the scope of sanitation. So you got this discussion of what does sanitation mean? Let's get a dictionary out. PHSA does not define sanitation. If a term goes undefined in a statute, courts give the term its ordinary meaning. Courts often start with dictionaries. Given that the statute was enacted, well, put it this way, most courts start with dictionaries, and I think it would be great if more courts did go with dictionaries, myself. That's me. Let me pull up the dictionary definition of, for example, something that's an ordinary term, wife. This is the Oxford English Dictionary, 2015, the year that the Obergefell decision came down. And it says, oh, wiener is a frankfurter. Wife, the woman to whom a man is married. Wi-Fi, computers, a system for sending data over computer networks using radio. And that's the end of the page. Wield is above wiener, to hold and use something as a weapon. Wiener, wife, the woman to whom a man is married. That's 2015 Oxford English Dictionary. I got like two or three, maybe four episodes on the definition of marriage. And some of you are thinking, wow, you must really like that topic. And I've written a lot about it. There's some articles on the Substack too that go into detail on the legalities of that and the story behind that. The civil rights story is often told wrong, and I tell the right story. So you'll want to take a look at that at some point. Well, PHSA does not start not define sanitation, so courts often start with dictionaries. Given the statute was enacted in 1944, the court looks to dictionaries from the early and mid 20th century to begin its analysis. They provide two senses of sanitation that are relevant here. First, sanitation may refer to measures that clean something or that remove filth, such as trash collection, washing with soap, incineration, plumbing. Okay, you got Webster's, you got Funk and Wagnalls. Okay. Second, sanitation may refer to measures that keep something clean. Okay, I'm on page 13. Measures for preserving and promoting public health. Put simply, sanitation as used in PHSA could have referred to active measures to cleanse something or to preserve the cleanliness of something. While the latter definition would appear to cover the mask mandate, the former definition would preclude it. Accordingly, the court must determine which of the two sentences is the best reading of the statute. Well, in choosing between definitions depends on context. To aid in this statutory interpretation inquiry, dictionaries provide only a helpful starting point. There's some philosophical issues and definitions that are covered in any good basic logic textbook. The one I used for 15 years is Patrick J. Hurley's Introduction to Logic, Chapter 2, which is all about definitions. I cover that in the Definition of Marriage in Law and Politics videos in those episodes from last year. Just FYI. By the way, you might wonder, why am I saying that now? Well, it's still on the ballot. You guys understand this is still the dictionary definition of marriage. The definition of marriage, the ordinary understanding of it, is still a political issue. You probably don't know that. And you might not know what I'm talking about right now, but it's on the ballot in California. There's another redefinition issue happening in California. Let me pause and get something for you. I'm sharing my screen again. I'm going to the Republican pa Professor Facebook page. As you can tell, this was a very popular post, but I just posted it 3 hours ago. Prop 3. This is the California College Republicans recommends no on Prop 3. Look at changes the marriage definition, changes the definition of marriage again, yet again, to include the right to marry anyone or anything. That's happening this fall. And I don't have the exact language ready, but I just minimally, I'm just pointing out that an issue related to the definition of marriage is a live issue right now in California in 2024. It's still like you wonder why I keep mentioning it. It's because it's not going to go away. It's a huge issue. And it goes to the deeper issue of the meaning of terms and limited government. And we're talking about the mask mandate. I mean, we could be talking about the definition of machine gun or short-barreled rifle, to put it in the Second Amendment context. I know a lot of you guys like the Second Amendment. Me too. Okay, so I'm on page 14. Because common words, okay, they give the broad sweep of what a word might mean, but not what it must mean in each context. She's quoting, mentioning Scalia and Garner's book, Reading Law: The Interpretation of Legal Texts, 2012. I have that book somewhere. I should probably break it out and do something with it on the podcast. Now she's quoting there. Because common words typically have more than one meaning, you must use the context in which a given word appears to determine its aptest, most likely sense. To know which meaning Congress has selected in section 264, the sense of cleaning or the sense of preserving cleanliness, the court must rely on the statute's context, including the surrounding words, the statute's structure and history, and common usage at the time. In short, the court must consider all the traditional tools of statutory interpretation. Based on these methods, the court concludes that the first sense, that of active cleaning, is the meaning of sanitation in Section 264A, 42 U.S. Code. Sanitation is limited to cleaning measures. That's number one. I'm on page 14. Statutory construction is a search for the ordinary contemporary meaning of terms and their context. The context of Section 264A indicates that sanitation and other measures refer to measures that clean something, not ones that keep something clean. Wearing a mask cleans nothing. At most, it traps virus droplets, but it neither sanitizes the person wearing the mask nor sanitizes the conveyance. Because the CDC required mask wearing as a measure to keep something clean, explaining that it limits the spread of COVID-19 through prevention, but never contending that it actively destroys or removes it, the mask mandate falls outside of Section 264A. This is a key part right there, what she just said. That's the key thing right there. Notice she's using the words of the statute, their ordinary meaning, using ordinary rules of statutory construction to find out which of the possible meanings of that spelling is meant by the authorized writer of the statute, that's Congress. The government would read sanitation and other measures more broadly. The government defines sanitation as the promotion of hygiene and prevention of disease by maintenance of sanitary conditions. Thus, they are using it in the second sense, that of a preventative measure. Of course, a word may or may not extend to the outer limits of definitional possibilities. Where it does depend on, it depends on reading the whole statutory text. In the same way, words that can have more than one meaning are given content by their surroundings. I'm going to use marriage again really quick. I'm going to pull up a definition from my MacBook Pro. One second. Okay, let's see here. Here's the definition, MacBook Pro. Let me see if I can make that bigger. Should have made it bigger already. All right, can you see that, guys? Marriage. The noun, formal union of a man and a woman, typically recognized by law, by which they become husband and wife. Look at the second definition. So, well, you have the same spelling, but the second is a combination or mixture of two or more elements. So there's a range of meaning of the spelling. The second one has never been used of people before. Look at the example given, a marriage of jazz, pop, blues, and gospel. The issue of combining or any close union, in other words, is somehow how it's phrased, is never used of people. Now I'm going to pull up Black's Law Dictionary. And I'll show you, how it's used in the legal context in our history. Marriage, as distinguished from an agreement to marry, is the civil status, condition, or relation of one man and one woman. You don't see anything in Black's Law Dictionary saying anything about any close union. That would be for non-people, like peanut butter, jelly, and honey, non-people. And this is just an example of what I'm talking about terms. The spelling could be the same, but they're two different words. And so you got to be careful. And that's what she's saying Biden's administration is doing here. They're taking sanitation. It's got the same spelling, means two different things. And the correct usage of that spelling in the statute is not the same meaning that the Biden's team says that supports the mask mandate in terms of sanitation. So the government would read sanitation and other measures more broadly. The government defines sanitation as the promotion of hygiene and prevention of disease by maintenance of sanitary conditions. Thus, they are using it in the second sense, that of a preventative measure. Of course, a word may or may not extend to the outer limits of definitional possibilities. Whether it does depends on reading the whole statutory text. In the same way, words can have more than one meaning. She should say spellings that can have more than one meaning are given content by their surroundings. Thus, even if the government is correct that sanitation may extend to preventative maintenance measures, and even if masking is a conventional sanitation measure, there are four reasons to believe it does not extend so far here, page 16. So she doesn't just assert this, she's arguing this. She's saying, here's my reasons for that conclusion. Start with the immediate context. Sanitation travels in company with inspection, fumigation, disinfection, pest extermination, and destruction. These terms involve measures aimed at identifying, isolating, and destroying the disease itself. And though sanitation is susceptible of many and wide-ranging meanings, it is given more precise content by the neighboring words with which it is associated. What these words have in common is that they involve identifying and eliminating known sources of disease. They do not maintain the status of being disinfected or fumigated. They all change an object's status. More specifically, they involve the direct targeting of disease through a discrete action. And again, some of this I'm getting rid of the quotation marks because she's quoting legal sources. So too, sanitation and other measures must be read in that context. Although the government argues for a broader sense of sanitation, or at least the sense of sanitation that preserves a state of cleanliness, many of its own examples involve active cleaning. Page 17. So, for example, offering hand sanitizer, sanitizing wipes as example of sanitation, both tools that remove pathogens and unwanted disease. Courts avoid ascribing to one word a meaning so broad that it is inconsistent with its accompanying words. Thus, though sanitation could be defined as maintaining something in a status of good hygiene and preventing disease, as the government's definitions show, the context here suggests that is not the case. It indicates instead that sanitation means changing, not preserving, the status of an object or area by cleaning. Customary usage at the time agrees. One method to assess the ordinary meaning of the term is to search a database of naturally occurring language. A search returns the desired word as well as its context, and with a sufficient sample size, search results permit inferences on how a word was used. This method is known as corpus linguistics. The court here searched the corpus of historical American English to find uses of sanitation between 1930 and 1944. Of the 507 results, the most frequent usage of sanitation fit the primary sense described above, a positive act to make something, to make a thing or place clean. Common examples refer to sanitation in the context of garbage disposal, sewage and plumbing, or direct cleaning of a dirty or contaminated object. In contrast, by far the least common usage, hovering around 5% of the data set, was of sanitation as a measure to maintain a status of cleanliness, as a barrier to keep something clean. I'm going to mention here that the court is doing its own briefing here. And so the COHA search results are consistent with the contextual clues of the active words surrounding sanitation in section 264A. I'm on page 18. And how much more are we going to do today? We're not going to finish this today. I'm going to go through page 23, hopefully. Further contextual clues support this reading. One is an implication of the government's definition on the surrounding terms. Recall that Congress listed fumigation and disinfection and destruction alongside sanitation. If the government is correct that sanitation allows for CDC's mask mandate because it promotes hygiene and prevents the spread of disease, then the remaining words in section 264A, such as disinfection and fumigation, are unnecessary. Every act necessary to prevent disease spread would be possible under sanitation. Very good. That's a very good insight right there. Yeah, why would it be limited to emergency pandemics? You would want to do this all the time. It would thus be impossible to give effect to every clause of the word of the statute, because these words would all be subsumed under the umbrella of conventional sanitation measures. Such a reading renders most of the second sentence mere surplusage, an untenable result when other interpretations are available. That's a reductio ad absurdum type of argument. These words cannot be meaningless, else they would not have been used. In other words, that's an absurd result. So we must deny what led to the absurdity, namely the government's argument. Instead, sanitation more likely refers, consistent with most common usage at the time, to acts that remove refuse or debris from an area or object, a reading that preserves independent meaning for the other terms in section 264A. The history of 264 is another clue. As the list of actions suggests, I'm on page 19, the federal government's use of the quarantine power has traditionally been limited to localized disease elimination measures applied to individuals and objects suspected of carrying disease. The federal government's authority to inspect and quarantine was used to assist states, which held the primary authority to institute public health measures. She mentions that public health power is historically part of state police power. Though the government once conceded that Section 264A merely consolidates and codifies this history, it now finds a power that extends far beyond it to population-wide preventive measures, such as near universal mask requirements that apply even in settings with little nexus to interstate disease spread, like city buses and Ubers. Such a definition reverses the import of history as well as the roles of the states and the federal government. Trump appointee, Trump appointee. Page 20. In sum, the context of the nearby words, the contemporary usage, that's contemporary to 1944 when it was passed, the implications of the government's definitions, that's the reductio ad absurdum argument, and the history of Section 264 suggests that sanitation and other measures like sanitation are far narrower than the government posits. Number two, sanitation is limited to property, page 20. Sanitation is limited to property, page 20. There is another serious flaw to the masking as sanitation argument. Subsection A does not give the CDC power to act on individuals directly. You have a Trump-appointed judge defending individual liberty from government encroachment, which always has to do with manipulating language and definitions of terms, always. Ignoring limitations and acting inappropriately by abusing definitions. Reading the statute, so the CDC is not given power to act on individuals directly. Reading the statute as a whole shows that it is divided into two parts. The first part, subsection A, gives the CDC power to directly impose on an individual's property interests. The second part, subsections B through D, that is subsections dog through boy, give the CDC power to directly impose on an individual's liberty interests. Page 21. Since the mask mandate regulates an individual's behavior, wearing a mask. It imposes directly on liberty interests, not the property interests contemplated in subsection A. This reading is reinforced by three textual observations. First, the titles of subsections B, C, and D each reference persons, while the title of subsection A does not. Far more importantly, the body of subsection A focuses on what the CDC may not do or may do to objects that may be dangerous to persons, while subsections B through D are addressed only to the CDC's treatment of individuals. Second, all the examples in subsection A, inspection, fumigation, disinfection, sanitation, Christian flip-off, pest extermination, and destruction are words that are not commonly used to describe what one first does to a person, except, you know, in the abortion context, which the Democrats love. Instead, they are tied to specific tangible things on which the agency may act. The only term arguably applicable to persons is inspection, but that would undercut any independent meaning given to examination in the later subsection. Third, the mask mandate is more closely related to a power discussed in subsection B, conditional release. That's section 264B, B as in boy. The mandate requires a traveler to do something to have the privilege of passing a checkpoint and continuing on his journey. I'm on page 22. In other words, a person may travel subject to or dependent on a condition, namely that he wear a mask. Black's Law Dictionary. Woo! Defines release to include the fact of being freed from restraint or confinement. Webster's dictionary defines confine as to prevent free onward passage or motion of. That power is not contemplated in subsection A. It is contemplated in subsection B, which provides for the apprehension, detention, or conditional release of individuals. Explaining that an individual subject to isolation, quarantine, or conditional release may order release order may travel if the CDC approves the precautions taken to prevent potential transmission or spread of a communicable disease. The power to conditionally release a person bears similarity to a provisional pratique, which allowed a vessel to enter the port only after completing some narrow and discreet task, typically fumigation of cargo or the like. Indeed, the mandate likens itself to pratique, saying that conveyance operators operating a conveyance arriving at or departing from a U.S. port of entry must require all persons on board to wear masks for the duration of travel as a condition of controlled free pratique. Pratiques apply to vessels and conveyances giving permission for a carrier to enter U.S. port, disembark, and begin operation under certain stipulated conditions. You mean we control the border? Is that what you're trying to say? A conditional release does the same for individuals. Both measures grant clearance to travel when a person or object conforms to the procedures required by public health officials. The opposite of conditional release is detention or quarantine. Anyone who refuses to comply with the condition of mask wearing is, in a sense, detained or partially quarantined by exclusion from a conveyance or transportation hub under authority of the mask mandate. They are forcibly removed from their airplane seats, denied boarding at bus stops, and turned away at train station doors, all on the suspicion that they will spread a disease. Indeed, the mask mandate enlists local governments, airport employees, flight attendants, and even ride-sharing drivers to enforce these removal measures. In short, their freedom of movement is curtailed in a way similar to detention and quarantine. See Black's Law Dictionary, defining detention as confinement or compulsory delay, and quarantine as the isolation of a person with communicable disease or the prevention of such a person from coming into a particular area, the purpose being to prevent the spread of disease. Neither detention nor quarantine are contemplated in 264A, though the section the CDC relied on to issue the mandate. That's the section the CDC relied upon to issue the mandate. Instead, they are found in subsections B through D. As a result, the mask mandate is best understood not as a sanitation, but as an exercise of the CDC's power to conditionally release individuals to travel despite concerns that they may spread a communicable disease and to detain or partially quarantine those who refuse. By the way, commandeering private entities and state and county and local officials in doing that. But the power to conditionally release and detain is ordinarily limited to individuals entering the United States from a foreign country. Section D allows for the detention of an individual traveling between states only if he is reasonably believed to be infected, meaning he is infected and is actually found upon examination to be infected. The mask mandate complies with neither of those subsections. It applies to all travelers, regardless of their origin or destination, and makes no attempt to sort based on their health, their actual health. The CDC may not attempt to shoehorn into subsection A power Congress denied it in subsection C and D. As a result, the mask mandate exceeds the authority the statute grants the CDC. I'm on page 24 now, just simply because my stapler doesn't go that far. It only goes through about 20 some pages, 22 pages or so. And we're going to start there next time with the government disagrees, and we're going to go through that. We're going to go through the rest of it until she signs it on page. Where does she sign it? She signs it on page 59. So we're going to go through it because it's important. Thank you for joining me on Republican Professor Podcast, Fall 2024.